Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. Yeah, I've been watching Ginobili highlights for the past, basically since I woke up this morning and all of last night.
Nice.
So sad.
Yeah, he's going to be missed, but I'm hoping my man Luka Doncic is going to be able to replace some of what he brought to the game, yeah.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line, I got my main man, Josh, coming out of Barhaven.
How you doing?
I'm a little sad, man, I won't lie. We got some heartbreaking news yesterday.
Yeah, first news in a long time, it seems like, but it was pretty terrible news, unfortunately.
So as you guys can guess, we're going to talk about Manu finally retiring yesterday, and then we're going to move into some division previews. It's been a long summer, and I just need to talk about ball, so we're going to just jump right into it. Yeah, let's just start off with Manu.
Number 20, Manu Ginobili!
You know, the guy's been around for 16 seasons, he's 41 years old now. And he's finally hung it up, the last of the big three to leave San Antonio.
Yeah, it was quite a sad day yesterday when that tweet came through from Woj and Shams, signaling that, you know, Ginobili's finally decided to hang them up. But Ginobili is going down the list of, you know, things that he's accomplished in his 16 years in basketball. Like, I guess it's 20 years in basketball overall, but he's a four-time NBA champion, two-time NBA All-Star, two-time All-NBA third team, sixth man of the year, all-rookie second team, EuroLeague champ, EuroLeague finals MVP, two-time EuroLeague finals top scorer, all-EuroLeague first team, Italian Cup MVP, two-time Series A MVP, and Olympic champion, obviously. So he's had quite the career.
Yeah, I think hearing that he only made two All-Star games is actually pretty underwhelming. Because I think his career was a lot bigger than just two All-Star games. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's Popovich extending his career by lowering his minutes. Because with the style of play that he implemented, like if he actually played, you know, James Harden type of minutes where he averaged 36 minutes a game, he would have only played 40 games per year. Because he's always so banged up. It's in the way that he goes recklessly to the basket. And he's had a lot of injuries over the course of his career, but with him only playing 25 to 28 minutes a game, especially in the regular season, I think that was, you know, one of those things that prolonged his career, sort of like Pop did with Tim Duncan, too.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure we all remember that Manu was one of the first guys to actively take the six-man role and just roll with it. Right? Like, he didn't really complain. He was just like, yeah, okay, whatever works for the team. I'm that kind of guy. And, you know, like, in his prime, Manu was... Like what, top two, top three shooting guard in the league?
Yeah, most definitely. It was Kobe, Wade, and then him, probably.
Would you have Manu above Wade? So top five all-time shooting guards. You obviously have
No. Wade is definitely ahead of Manu, for sure. So I think if Manu was able to, you know, stay healthy and play longer minutes and, you know, have a more, I guess, a career as a starter where he was, like, one of the main guys, especially throughout the course of the regular season where his numbers increased, I think you compare them at that point, but as a player, like I think it's pretty close. But you know, just based on the numbers and like Manu not being able to play long minutes, like Wade was able to, or even Kobe, I think that sort of separates them.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. So number four all time, number five shooting guard.
Yeah, I would say so. He's in the top five for sure. I think Jerry West is in there too, and then Manu.
Damn, man, that's a legend. We're just retiring here. He's all okay. You know how people always say the most underrated second round pick ever and like that kind of stuff when you talk about Draymond Green, Gilbert Arenas, Isaiah Thomas. Manu Ginobili in his draft was 57.
Yeah, I mean, he probably is the best second round pick ever, right?
That's exactly where I was going to go with it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he basically led a lot of those Spurs teams along with Duncan before Parker was really in his prime, right? He took on the role. He's one of those, like, true team guys that no one ever talked trash about.
Yeah, and on that note, too, one of the things I forgot to mention in his accomplishments is he has the highest win percentage of any player in NBA history.
Whoa,
so,
really?
Yeah. He's ahead of Russell. He's ahead of Duncan. He's ahead of all those guys throughout the course of his career. So he's at the top of the charts for that, which goes to show you that, you know, he sacrifices for the team, but he's a winner. Like, he just went out there and won games, especially in the playoffs. Like, when he had to play more minutes, he was just – he was lead ball handler a lot of the time for the Spurs, especially in those, you know, series against the Suns and, like, playing against Detroit where he could have arguably won that Finals MVP, too. He was something else.
Yeah. You can't forget those times that he, like, killed the Mavericks, too. And those, like, those mid-2000s years?
Growing up, I was a Suns stan. Like, I love Nash and Amari, obviously. So I was always cheering for those teams. And the one team they just couldn't get over the hump with was the Spurs. So back then, I didn't really appreciate Manu's game as much because I was always cheering against him. And he would always just absolutely obliterate the Suns. He had a couple game winners against, like, Rajah Bell in the playoffs. Ooh. And he had huge games, too. I think his huge breakout game, he scored like 48 points in the playoff against the Suns. And he had that behind-the-back spin move in the lane against Marion in overtime.
I remember that. That was dirty.
Yeah, and then, like, when he actually got an opportunity to start throughout the regular season, when the Spurs were a little bit banged up, he was averaging like 25 points a game in that stretch, and the Spurs were winning every game. So it just goes to show you, like, he's one of the most efficient shooting guards of all time. And in the minutes that he did play. And again, if he did play more minutes, I think he would have had a much less of a career in terms of the years. But again, Popovich is a genius in being able to keep him playing until 40 years old or 41 now. So
yeah, 41, man, that's crazy. What are you going to remember him the most for, I guess? Like, what's your fondest memory of the guy? Because I got a couple.
Fondest memory, I would say, honestly, probably them beating Miami in the second finals that they played, where everyone thought that after that year where they lost to Miami in seven games, that Manu was basically done because he was turning the ball over so much. And as a lead ball handler, he just wasn't the same guy. And then the year afterwards, he just broke out in a few of those games in the finals and he dunked on Chris Bosh. I think that was like the exclamation point on just saying, like, I'm still here. I think besides him just destroying my son's teams, I think that's the second memory that I would have.
That's pretty funny. He's one of those guys that, like, every year he always had that one monster dunk just to remind you that he was still athletic. You know what I mean? Like, remember when Kobe, towards the tail end of his career, there was that dunk against the Nets. He had that one over the Hawks, and you were like, oh my god, Kobe still got hops? Ginobili does that every year. Right, like, he gets at least like one poster every year, and you're like, whoa, you're like 40 years old and you're still doing this? It's crazy.
Yeah, I was watching highlights of his last year in the league, and he still has some dunks in those highlights as well, so he was still getting up there at age 40.
Yeah, it's insane, man. But for my fondest memories, I obviously have him swatting the bat out of midair when they were in I guess the San Antonio arena, like, there was a bat flying around. He just, like, smoked it barehanded while the bat was, like, flying through the court. And everyone was like, what the hell just happened here?
Yeah, you had the mascot out there with the net, the coyote, trying to catch it. You had security guards running around the court trying to catch it. And all of a sudden, it comes around Manu, and he just swipes it. That was crazy.
And, like, as if nothing was happening, or, like, it wasn't weird at all. Just resumed, had a towel on his hand for a bit, and that was it.
Yeah.
Like, how do you keep playing after that? It's so weird.
Yeah, I think he had to get, like, a tetanus shot after that, too.
Oh, you have to. And then the other one was, do you remember, I think it was around 2010, maybe 2013 or so, he, like, blew out his shoe? Do you remember this?
He was, like... Vaguely.
I'm sorry, yo, your sock is literally coming out of your shoe, and you still finish your layup. It's pretty nuts, man.
Yeah, that just shows you his competitive nature and what a great competitor he was over the course of the last 16 years. Like, nothing really stopped the guy. It doesn't matter who was on him. He performed in the highest intensity moments against Detroit in the finals, the Lakers in the playoffs. Like, he was a top-notch performer when it mattered, which is something that you can't say about a lot of these guys that put up stats in the regular season. He was always a guy you can count on to, give you 20 plus points per game and be a primary ball handler and lead the team to victory in playoffs, especially. So, yeah. And I think the other memories that most of his fans would say that are at the top of the charts, obviously, with him would be like, obviously, the Eurostep implementing that.
Hell yeah.
I mean, he was probably the first guy to come into the league using that move. And he used it right away, too. I remember in the playoffs against the Lakers when he first came in the league, nobody really expected him to play. And everyone, when he started playing, they're like, who is this guy? And then he made this crazy Eurostep move against Shaq. He just went straight around him. And after that, you could just see, like, his confidence just boomed after that. He was hitting three-point shots. And, yeah, you can see his career taking off at that point. And the other point is, the Argentinian team winning the Olympics, I think it was in 2008, if I'm not mistaken.
04.
04? Okay. Yeah, so 04. That team was something else. And, they played a great brand of basketball, too, just team basketball. Not really cared who was getting the ball, who was scoring. But I think in the last game, Ginobili put up, 29 points in the final game against the U.S., right?
No, the U.S. was third.
Oh, okay. So it was the game before that where they advanced against the U.S. He put up 29 points and he outscored Tim Duncan, like Carmelo, a bunch of different guys that were on that team.
I don't think Wade was on the team, but like Steph was on that team. Iverson was on that team.
Bunch of guys that just didn't show up for that U.S. on the big team and Argentina just destroyed them. Yeah. It was great.
Yeah. Shouts to Luis Scola and Fabrizio Alberto being on that Argentina team.
Yep.
Carlos Delfino. That was a crazy team, man. Like a lot of just random guys who had their place in the league.
Yeah, but as a team, those guys were playing together for years and years, and that year just sort of all came together, and Manu led them to the championship. And he had that crazy shot off the dribble, too, when I think they were down a point during the tournament.
Oh,
and,
That was against,
that crazy floating shot.
Team. Yeah. Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, shouts to Manu, man. What a crazy career. All right, let's move on. I think it's time that we start our division preview, and we're going to start in no better place than the Southeast Division. I'm kidding, there are better places, but we're just going to start here. And I want to start with the Atlanta Hawks. They made a couple of interesting moves this offseason. They traded Dennis Schroeder away for Carmelo Anthony, who was then waived. They signed Vince Carter, obviously, and Alex Len, which sort of slipped under the radar because it's Alex Len. And what else did they do? Oh, yeah. They drafted Trae Young. They traded away Luka Doncic, which might be, a crazy move on their part, but they got their guy in Trae Young.
Yeah, they got their guy, and you're missing the most important transaction of all in that they traded for Jeremy Lin.
Oh, snap. I totally forgot about that.
And I'm like half joking right now, but at the same time, I hope that he's able to, revitalize his career after two straight years where he tore his ACL, I believe, in the first or second game of each season. So.
Yeah, let's stay healthy, Jeremy. Come on, man.
And he's going to be playing backup minutes this year, too, behind Trae Young. So hopefully he's able to prolong his career by just not playing as much and not putting as much, as much strain on his knees.
They can't start next to each other?
I think they're probably going to go with the same lineup as last year, except with Trae Young in place of Schroeder, and that they're going to have Bazemore, Prince, Collins, and then Deadman in the starting lineup.
Bazemore, eh? You like him more than Jeremy Lin to start?
I mean, he started last year, so I don't really see why that would change. And I don't think Jeremy Lin or Trae Young is going to be able to guard two guards. So I think that your better option is to have Bazemore starting at the start of the year. Yeah, and I guess once the trade deadline comes around, there's a lot of guys that are candidates to be traded off this team. So I think Bazemore is one of those guys.
Yeah, I can see that happening pretty quickly. This team is, I guess there's a lot of potential here, right? You got Torian Prince, you got Trae Young, obviously, like I said, John Collins. like, the team is, it's really young. Jeremy Lin's probably the oldest player on the team.
Yeah, Vince Carter brings that up a lot, though.
My bad.
But yeah, I mean, outside of them, it is a pretty young team, and this is obviously a transition year where they're going to be one of, if not the worst team in the NBA. They don't have a lot of overall talent on this team, especially on the bench. I mean, on the bench, you have, you know, DeAndre Bembry hasn't really shown that much. He came in the same year as Torian Prince. Justin Anderson's another guy they took a flyer on, who's going to be coming off the bench for them this year. And then Alex Len, another guy who hasn't really developed. So you have a lot of guys that are in their second or third years that haven't really shown that much, but they're going to get an opportunity to play a lot of minutes on this team.
Yo, what do you think of them taking on Alex Len? Do you think it's worth it? He's making 2 years, 8.5, full, or with a full guaranteed contract.
Yeah, I mean, he's only, what, 23, 24 years old, and he has shown that he has some talent, and he's a seven-footer that can move. But I don't know. I mean, I've never really been a believer in Alex Len. He has the body for it. He looks like he has a game as well, but he just hasn't really accepted a role throughout the course of, you know, his first couple of years in the league. But maybe that's just because he's been on a bad team, but at the same time, he's going to a bad team right now. So I don't know. He's going to play a lot, but I'm not sure if he's going to develop into the player that a lot of people expected out of him as a first-round pick. And
I could see him being at, like, a good stats on a bad team guy. Although he had that chance in Phoenix already and never really did anything with it. But I don't know. This Atlanta team seems promising for that because there's no other real big other than John Collins.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for them this year is obviously developing their young players, as we said. So I think John Collins is going to play a lot of minutes at center this year, too. I think they're going to see what they have with him. He's shown a lot of creativity off the bounce in the summer league. So I think that's something that they're going to try to implement, and seeing that if he can be like a playmaking four type, and or possibly a playmaking five if he's able to bulk up a little bit. But he's only 6'8" or 6'9", so he's going to play in a lot of small lineups. But at the same time, I don't know if you want to put him out there too much at the five, because that could end up, you know, hurting him long term. If it's sort of like a Chris Bosh situation when he was at the Raptors, in that when he played center, he's getting beat up by guys like Jahadi White and Brendan Haywood. And
Jahadi White.
I remember when Jahadi kicked the crap out of one of the games. That still stays with me to this day.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
You don't want a guy like John Collins fighting with these big brutes like, you know, DeAndre Jordan in the starting lineup, and, you know, shortening his career because he's had to take all these bumps and bruises in his second year in the league. So it's good that they have a guy like, you know, Dwayne Dedman and Alex Len that can take the pressure off him at least and allow him to play against smaller guys.
Sharpshooting Dwayne Dedman these days.
I actually like him as a player. He's another candidate to get traded for sure, though. I'm surprised nobody really either traded for him or looked at him in the offseason, because he seems like he's been a good defensive anchor the last couple of seasons in limited minutes. But he could be a guy like, you know, even Aaron Baines on Boston, where he comes in and plays 15 and 20 solid minutes a game and doesn't really make any mistakes.
Yeah, he's also like 29.
Yeah, so I mean, he's a guy that can help a lot of playoff teams, I think. So he's another candidate to get either bought out or trade at the deadline.
All right, so Atlanta's over-under, according to Westgate this year, is 23.5. What do you think here?
I'm going under for sure. I think that they're really going to bottom out. And Trae Young is obviously a guy we haven't talked too much about, but in his first year in the league, there's going to be a lot of attention on him. And it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts to all that attention and how he reacts to getting trapped on the ball so much with Atlanta's limited talent around him. I think he's going to have like a Kemba Walker type of rookie season where he shoots really awful but does show flashes.
Yeah, I could see that. It's I'm not really a fan of his. He had that hot start in Oklahoma, and I guess he wasn't really touted to be that great coming out of high school either, so it sort of came out of nowhere last year. He cooled off in the tail end of the season really quickly. So it'll be interesting to see whether he's able to adjust, because teams aren't going to let him just pull up from like 30 or 35 anymore. Especially when he's like one of two or three options that can actually score on their own on the team. They're going to trap him real quick.
Yeah, but at the same time, that's going to be a good experience for him in learning what he has to do to go against those traps and go against those high hedges and such on the pick and roll.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think like when the trade deadline comes around and, you know, they possibly trade guys like Bazemore and Devin, as we talked about, I can see them going just for full tank mode and maybe not even winning more than two other games from, you know, February onward.
Damn. So what do you like him for, like 15 wins? 18? I think around 18.
Yeah, I think 18 to 20 is fair. I don't think 15 is realistic. You still have some talent on this team, but I think like 18-ish to 20, I think, is the neighborhood that you're looking at.
I'd say so, too. So that's an easy bottom three team in the league.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Next up on the docket, we got the Charlotte Hornets. Major offseason moves. Well, they got rid of Dwight. Traded him for Timofey Mozgov, who was then flipped for Bismack Biyombo. They drafted Miles Bridges, and they brought in James Borrego, formerly of the Spurs staff.
Yeah, and you can't forget 37-year-old Tony Parker either.
Man, how do I keep forgetting things? Oh my god. Tony Parker, ew. What's the point? Yeah, I don't see this team doing that much damage this year. They're basically just Kemba, Batum, and what, Bismack now? Kaminsky, I guess?
No, I think the one thing they have going for them is when they played Cody Zeller with Kemba Walker 2 years ago in those lineups, they were a big plus in the starting lineup. So those guys just work well together. Like, they just know how to work off each other. And on defense, Zeller is a much better option than Dwight Howard because he actually sticks to the principles of the defensive system.
Oh,
unlike
no.
Dwight, who would just... He would just do random things, especially on the pick and roll, where he just like try to hard hedge and not stay within the game plan. He's just a guy that, you know, we know who Dwight is by now.
He's but, a wild card.
Yeah, he's out there. But yeah, they're bringing back basically the same lineup, except with Zeller in place of Dwight. And then off the bench, you have, like you said, Parker, Miles Bridges, and Biyombo. So in terms of candidates to improve, I think you have to go look at a guy like Malik Monk going into his second year. But last year he was, you know, turnstile on defense. So, you know, in terms of his development, you see him playing a lot of minutes at the two. With MKG, I think, as the guy as yacht man out this year with Miles Bridges coming in as well. So I think MKG has to show something in the start of the season or else he might be the guy that doesn't play more than 20 minutes a game.
Which is going to be a real shame. What was he, like a number three pick?
I think he was number two in that draft. Two?
Man.
Yeah, behind Anthony Davis.
Yeah, he's only 25, too. Like, he's still really young. I could see him coming off the bench as, like, the sixth man behind Malik Monk. And that's not assuming that Malik Monk even develops that much, right? Like, it's really hard to tell, especially for a guy going into their second year. It really depends on what he's worked on his game this whole summer.
Yeah, for sure. And he showed flashes last year of being a guy that can put up a lot of points in a small amount of time, too. But at the same time, with James Borrego coming in from San Antonio... I just see him committing to more defensive lineup, especially in the starting five with MKG starting at the three again with Batum at the two. But that could change over the course of the year. Another guy who actually made some good strides last year was Jeremy Lamb. His shooting improved last year, and his defense actually improved a little bit last year as well. So he could be a guy that ends up starting by the midway point of the year, too, if they want to get more shooting in the starting lineup. And, you know, guy like it's sort of weird that a guy like Marvin Williams has been around for, I think, 13 years now. He just keeps sticking around the league.
And,
you know, he's still starting somehow, even though he hasn't really contributed all that much, especially on offense, for a guy that we expected to be like a top-level type talent and being drafted, I think, second overall in his draft, too. That was a Darren Williams and Chris Paul draft.
Yeah, Marvin Williams being drafted before Chris Paul is absolutely insane, especially as a sixth man on UNC that year. That made absolutely no sense.
Yeah.
I actually see this team running the ball through Batum a lot more than Kemba. Just because of Borrego, right? Like, coming off of that Spurs system, I think it's a lot of... it's going to be a lot more, like, ball movement-based. Obviously, a lot more defensive, but... A lot of using other guys to handle the rock instead of solely relying on the point guard to handle the ball. And Batum can handle the rock. He's a great assist guy. He knows how to make the right decisions, basically. He's one of those guys. So if you can get him the ball, I think he can find, like you said, guys like Zeller or Marvin Williams for open threes.
Yeah, I like the idea of Batum, but the last 2 years, ever since he got that massive contract, he's been really bad.
He was hurt.
He's always been hurt, though, but the times that he did play, like, he wasn't showing the same type of intensity and, like, willingness to commit to, you know, playing basketball, it seemed like.
Maybe that's because he had Dwight Howard on his team.
Maybe, but even the year before that, like, he just wasn't the same type of player. I don't know. Maybe he's just in the twilight of his career now. He's in his 30s now, I believe. So
he's 30 this year. Come on, man. Don't do that to the guy.
I don't know. He hasn't shown a lot the last 2 years, and I just don't really see a reason why you would think that he's going to return to form like when he was 26, 27, doing a lot of different things on the floor. And his defense has been really bad, even though he has a reputation for being a good defensive player. But I don't know. The last 2 years has made me skeptical of his overall play.
You remember when he was like Andre Kirilenko-esque? Like hovering with 5x5s every game, like every week more realistically?
Yeah, he was putting up stats.
Yeah, I still think he's got it in him. I think it's like,
I don't know.
I think it's maybe a combination of the coaching and just like the roster that you're surrounded by.
Yeah, and like you said, opportunity. If he has a guy that handles the ball more often, maybe that'll get his game going a little bit. But yeah. One thing we haven't talked about yet is Kemba, and that he's going into the last year of his contract, and they have to make a decision whether they're going to keep him or not.
Oh, I think they want to keep him. Jordan's made that very clear. He's gonna.
Yeah, but
what do you think he'll make, like, if he signs somewhere else, like 25?
What is he now, 28 years old, 29?
He's 28 this year, so he'll be 20 going into 29 as a free agent.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, a team like Charlotte that's sort of stuck right now in basketball purgatory, that, you know, the recurring treadmill of basketball, like, I'm not sure if you want to sign a guy for 5 years going into, you know, when he's like 34 years old, when you don't really have a good team around him. Like, if they were a playoff team, like a guaranteed playoff team, and they were going to be like a top four seed, I could see re-signing him. But why do you want to commit so much money to a guy when you can't really surround him with anything?
Because he's their only marketable player.
They should have bought him out a long time ago.
No, honestly. Come on, man. He's only making $12 million. What's the point of buying him out?
Not buying him out, bottoming out.
Oh, bottoming.
The team should have bottomed out a long time. They should have traded him last year.
Yeah, but I don't know, man. It's kind of hard to tell them to just bottom out, considering their draft history hasn't been the best. Right? Like, they take some big swings, and their swings haven't hit yet. Obviously, you still have time for Malik Monk to develop and Miles Bridges this year, but you know, there's still time. Kemba's young. He's what, a top 15, 20 point guard in the league? Top 15?
Yeah, but the problem is you have so much money tied up between Kemba, Batum, and now Biombo. Biombo has one more year left on his contract, too. So if you re-sign Kemba Walker this offseason, and you have those two guys on the books, you really can improve besides having internal improvement with, you know, Malik Monk and Miles Bridges. So I just don't see where this team can go if they re-sign him, because they're just going to be another, like, what, 8 to 10 seed, possibly? And
I think that's what they need to keep the team afloat, though, especially since they have the All-Star game this year. They have to do something.
I guess. Yeah, but what's the hype behind an 8-seeded team?
It doesn't matter. Not everyone has a good team.
Remember? No, for sure.
Like, so, sometimes you have to be the Atlanta Hawks of, like, you know, 2011. And just be that run-of-the-mill team with Joe Johnson as your star guy.
Yeah, but they were still like a fourth or fifth seed most years, right? Whereas this team will be lucky to make the playoffs.
Yeah, not with my boy Batum. So Kemba is the number six highest paid player on the team. You've already mentioned Batum and Biombo of having higher salaries. Who else do you think has a higher salary? There are three other players.
I know Marvin Williams signed for 4 years, 52 a couple of years ago, too. So he's in there. MKG, I think, signed for around the same number. He's around $10 million a year.
He's at 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
Outside of them.
One more. Who's making more than MKG but less than Marvin Williams? We already talked about him. You love him.
Zeller?
Yes.
Wow.
Cody Zeller is making $13.5 million.
Well,
what is happening?
I like him as a player, though. Like, he's actually a pretty solid player, but $13 million is a bit much. So
that's insane.
So in saying all this, in, you know, having all these mid-level guys at like 12 to 13 million, how can you justify bringing back Kemba when you have so many guys tied up?
He's their best player.
That it just, you just have to let it go at some point, you know, like with the whole Mozgov swap.
No.
With the whole Mozgov squad and getting Biombo for another year, too, it's like, what was the point in that? You're just trading off contracts when you should just be trying to get rid of, you know, these contracts, let them expire instead, and,
yeah,
like, accept a few more losses, you know? Like, it's not going to change anything. Like, you're probably going to be a 10-seeded team this year. You're going to get, like, the 12th to 13th pick in the draft again. And then what? You're just in the same position as you were last year, and the year before that, and the year before that. It's just, I don't really understand where this team is going.
Sounds a lot like the Toronto Raptors from a few years ago.
Yeah, but the Raptors stepped up and they became the first seed because they actually had the talent around these guys to actually have younger guys that can develop into something. Like, they have so many guys off the bench that could be rotation players in any team now, and possibly starters too. Whereas this team only has projects that might become something in the future, but they haven't shown anything yet.
Malik Monk, the new version of Norm Powell.
Yeah, maybe. I like Monk, though. I think he's going to be a good player.
Monk is good. He has a lot of potential, but I don't know. He didn't really impress me that much last year. And he came into the league with a lot of hype coming out of Kentucky, so there's still a lot to do for him.
Yeah, at the same time, though, Clifford didn't really play him that much because he just doesn't like rookies. And when he got a chance to play, that was like at the end of the year, when he got a chance to play point guard, which is probably going to be good for him later on down the road with him, possibly being a primary ball handler in the future. But he's going to get his opportunity this year, and I hope that he's able to succeed and, break out this year.
Westgate has them at 35.5 wins. I'm going way under. Not way under. I'm going like 30.
I don't know. I think their defense is going to improve this year, so I'm going to go slight over. I'm going to go 36 or 37 wins.
Really?
Yeah. I think this team has just enough talent, especially in the Eastern Conference, where a lot of teams are not trying to win. I think they're going to get a lot of, easy wins off teams like Atlanta. Yeah. And they're actually trying to win. Teams. So if they actually, if they stay somewhat healthy and they continue to, do what Jordan wants and try to become a playoff team for who knows what reason. But I think they're going to compete with Detroit for the 8th seed. And I think that they're going to be around 36, 37 wins if they stay healthy. But, the trade deadline comes around. They're not really winning enough games to be a possible projected playoff team. I could see them totally bottoming out too and trading Kemba. So this could go like two whole separate directions. I either see them like totally bottoming out or being like a fringe playoff team or a team that just misses out in the playoffs.
A soft over. Wow. All right, I hope you're right, but I don't know. I don't see it. Maybe Brago can change it that much. All right, I want to take our talents down to South Beach. And to be honest, nothing's happened in Miami this offseason, right? I'm not missing anything?
No, I don't think so. They basically brought back the exact same lineup because they tied all their money up into, four or five guys last offseason with, Hassan Whiteside getting that huge deal, Olynyk getting 50 mil. Tyler Johnson got a $50 million a couple years ago.
Ooh, good for Tyler.
Richardson
Johnson.
Got paid. Waiters got paid last year too, yeah. And he's coming back. I guess he's the only guy that'd be coming back where he didn't really play a lot last year.
Yeah, he got hurt really early on. And
yeah,
probably the most notable, I guess, non-transaction is Dwayne Wade hasn't re-signed with him yet.
Yeah, that's the one thing in limbo right now. I don't think he's going to be coming back either because they already have so many guys on the wings. I think that if he were to come back, he wouldn't be playing as much, and I don't think he wants that.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade can still put up numbers, especially in the clutch. Like, he was really good with them after they got him at the trade deadline last year, right?
Yeah, for sure. Like, he was actually a pretty good rotational player, and in the playoffs, he stepped up in that one game, too, where he actually won them a playoff game, so.
I think Miami's just going to do the same thing all over again. I see them as, like, a 7 seed. They'll just be a feisty team, really good defensive team. Everyone knows their role. Dion Waiters is going to come back, so you'll have the guy hitting big shots.
There's one person who doesn't know their role, which I think is like the biggest storyline.
Hassan Whiteside knows their role. Hassan Whiteside is just busy partying with DJ Khaled.
I think that's the one big storyline for them going into the season, though. They don't really have a lot of major additions, obviously, in what we talked about. And I think Waiters is the only guy that might be a guy that steps in the starting lineup and plays a lot of minutes where, they didn't really have a guy that, could play those types of minutes at the two last year. I think Richardson gave them a lot of good minutes at the three last year. But I think the one big storyline, again, is Whiteside. And if he's going to accept his role as a guy that doesn't really get the ball that much in the post, but just has to go out there, play defense, rebound, block shots, and then finish around the basket, which is something that he wasn't willing to do last year, especially in the second part of the year.
He kind of reminds me of, like, Dwight Howard syndrome. Just wants the rock, doesn't want to run the pick and roll. He just wants to post up and do his thing. Sort of sways away on defense, even though Dwight was really good in his prime defensively. Hassan Whiteside is just, like, he's just a tall dude. He's got amazing athleticism, and his timing is pretty decent, but rotationally, he's not the best. So he's sort of just, like, I don't know, sort of a wild card out there.
Yeah, the one thing I like about this team, though, is Eric Spoelstra is one of the better coaches in the NBA, and he actually holds Hassan Whiteside accountable by benching him when he doesn't really do the things that Spoelstra asks of him. So I could see Adebayo eventually starting this year if Whiteside doesn't continue to, you know, accept his role on the team and, you know, be a guy in the background instead of being a primary guy on offense especially.
Yeah, hopefully he turns it around. Maybe Deion can just toss some sense into him because he wasn't around much last year. He's one of those guys that if he talks to guys like Dwayne Wade, I think he's thinking more like, these guys are washed, why would I listen to them? I think he needs a guy who's in his prime now to talk some sense into him. You know what I mean?
I don't think there's any sense to be talked into him, to be honest. I think he's just who he is at this point. Damn. I think he's just a knucklehead, man. Like, he just, he's not going to get it.
Well, that's a shame.
I think they're better off without him, to be honest, though. Like, oh, I think that they realize they made a big mistake in giving them that much money. And now that they have Adebayo, who actually does a lot of the things that they've asked Whiteside to do and does it better than him, you know, I think that they could eventually have him starting or even have Linux starting over him.
Wow. Imagine Whiteside being the highest paid player on your team going into, like, third rotation spot as a big. That would be insane.
The only thing holding them back from doing that, obviously, is that he has at least a year or two left on his contract, and they want to keep his value up. But at this point, after what happened last year, I'm not really sure that there's any value to be had with him making $20 million a year.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would want to trade for him either. It doesn't seem like many teams need a center. Like that kind of center, at least. You know what I mean? Like a purely athletic guy who's going to probably hit his athletic peak in the next year, if not, hasn't hit it already.
Yeah, I mean, he's still at 28, 29 years old. He's actually pretty old, considering that he's only been in the league for, you know, 4 or 5 years now. But he obviously went over to Europe and Russia for a long time and a situation where he wasn't really that mature when he first got in the NBA, and he got cut by a few teams, and he had to go out and about to different countries and build his game up again. And he got that training camp invite, and his game just blossomed all of a sudden. He was, you know, getting 10 block games in that 1 year.
Yeah, that was
and
crazy
he got his contract, and yeah, he thinks that he's better than he is, and he's just one of those types of players that has character issues. And you know, if he was 24, 25 years old, and teams saw him as a guy with his talent level, and they thought that he could change his perspective on things around, then maybe they take a chance on him. But at this point, I think he is what he is.
Yeah, he's 29 this year.
Yeah, so I mean, he's in the prime of his career, but at the same time, you know, he's mentally, he's probably at the level of a 16-year-old, so.
He's making $25 million, not 20, for the next couple
there you
of
go.
Years. He's got, okay, I'm on Basketball Reference, and he's got two nicknames. I don't think you're going to get them, so I'm just going to say them out. The first one is Agent Block. Whatever.
Jesus.
Cheesy. The other nickname, Count Blockula.
He probably made that up too.
Oh my god, Count Blockula.
Honestly, like, he was the first guy that was, you know, ragging on his 2K ratings. I think after one of his, you know, big first games in that year that he first came back when he had a 10 block game, like, he was the first guy in a post game press conference to be like, yeah, you need to increase my rating now, whoever the, you know, Ronnie from 2K or whatever his name is.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know, man. I hope he turns it around. I hope some guys can toss some sense into him, but he's kind of a knucklehead. Maybe Bam will take over. It'll be interesting to see. If Bam takes over, I would love it. I love watching Adebayo play. He's super athletic. He's really smart. He knows his role.
And he's just really competitive. He just tries really hard.
He's a monster out there. All right, so Miami's over-under is at 41.5. What do you got?
This one's a tough one. I think they have the overall depth to, you know, if they have health issues in the regular season, to be able to withstand that. I think they showed that last year with, you know, Waiters being out for most of the year. But with him back in the starting lineup now, with having five solid players off the bench with, you know, Tyler Johnson, Wayne Ellington, James Johnson, Olynyk, Adebayo, they have a lot of guys. So I'm going to say slide over again. I'm going to go with 42 or 43 wins.
Yeah, I had them around 42 as well. It's a pretty deep team. And like I said, most guys, not all of them, know their role. And they also brought back Wayne Ellington, which I think is going to be huge for them. He's another savvy vet. Hits the shots when he's open. Just does his thing. He's a very efficient player.
Yeah, he shut the lights out last year, too. The one thing with Miami, though, is they've sort of taken a Spurs approach, sort of like with Popovich and I guess you can say Pat Riley at this point, where they just want to stay competitive. the next couple of seasons before each of these guys retires. So before, Miami was always star hunting and trying to get guys around D-Wade. Obviously, they got LeBron and Chris Bosh. And I think the last couple of years, I think Pat Riley's, you know, the operations manager, essentially, for this team. And I think that they just want to stay competitive while he's still there. And then afterwards, once all these guys' contracts eventually come off the books, they might have to do like a full rebuild.
It'll be interesting to see. I have Miami around 42 as well. So I guess only time will tell. Let's move on into another rebuild team in the Orlando Magic. So major offseason moves. They obviously re-signed Aaron Gordon for 4 years, $76 million. Drafted Mo Bamba and Justin Jackson. And they traded for Timofey Mozgov and Jerian Grant for Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah, so this team has the worst point guard rotation, I think,
of
the last...
Do they have a point guard?
They have DJ Augustine and Jerian Grant.
Oh.
So they have to have the worst point guard rotation of all the teams that we're going to be going through the next couple weeks. And obviously this team, outside of the point guard rotation, they bring him back essentially the same team, except with Mo Bamba coming into place. He's probably going to be the backup for Vucevic to start out the year at least.
Yeah.
But this team just doesn't have a lot of proven talent, obviously. And their young guys, they look promising. I mean, Aaron Gordon's a good player. He could be a very good player soon. And Isaac is another guy's coming off, a year where he only played, I think, 40 or 50 games. He had a lot of injury concerns, but he's a guy with a lot of talent. And they're going to be fun to watch, especially off the bench with Isaac and Bamba coming off the bench and playing together. But overall, this team is going to be a team that doesn't win a lot of games, obviously, this year, like the last, I guess since Dwight left, really.
Yeah, they haven't been good since Dwight left at all. I mean, I think they have, like, a decent wing rotation, right? Terrence Ross.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I would say that.
Jonathan Simmons.
Yeah, and they got Wes Suwundu too, who like had a decent rookie year as well, but I don't know. I mean, Fournier and Simmons, those are guys that could start in a pinch, I guess, but I wouldn't really count on those guys to play quality minutes throughout the year. They're not really consistent. Like, Fournier shows flashes. Like, he has these games where he averages, gets like 25 points a game. And the next game, he gets like, 10 points or 12 points. So he's not a guy you can really count on as a primary ball handler, but he's the primary ball handler of this team, which is crazy.
I mean, he's the best point guard that they have.
He's not even a point guard.
Exactly. Just let Jonathan Simmons run the point at this rate.
Or just let Gordon go wild and just handle the ball all the time. It just seems like he wants to do anyways, so.
Yo, remember when Aaron Gordon started hitting threes at the beginning of last year? And everyone thought that he had turned into this like completely new player.
Yeah, I think for the year he averaged around 32%. He started off about 50.
Yeah, that guy cooled off real quick. But Orlando last year, man, they were like the talk of the league for the first month or so. They got off to that insanely hot start and then never got it back.
I think the smarter basketball analysts looked at them and they were like, they cannot maintain this 3-point percentage throughout the course of the year. They were like averaging, I think, 48% from three the first 2 or 3 weeks, and they were maybe like 7-3 to start the season. So teams, game plan for them after that, and they figured them out. So especially with Gordon, too. I mean, he's a guy that, like, his three-point shot actually looks good now, and he's able to really explode. Yeah, I think so. Like, if you compare it last year to the year before, his shot looks completely different.
So it's improved, but I wouldn't say it looks good.
The shot form doesn't have to look great for it to be a solid shot, though. I mean, I think the big thing with him, with his percentages going down throughout the course of the year, was just teams focusing more on him as a primary guy in that team. So I think if he were to, like, there was a lot of rumors about him going to Indiana in the offseason, and if they were to add him, like, they could have been, like, a top-level team, I think. If he was on that team with Oladipo and the guys that they have around those two, I mean, his three-point percentage, I think, would go way up. At around 37-38%, whereas on this team he's not going to get as many looks. He's going to be taking a lot of shots off the dribble, which is going to hurt his game, I think.
Yeah, I see a lot of lesser Blake Griffin in this guy.
I see him as like a Draymond Green type, to be honest, like a guy that can handle the ball a lot. He could be a great defensive player too. I don't think he's a Blake Griffin type. He doesn't really have like the offensive game to be a primary guy, I don't think. But
you think if he was more You think he has the defensive game to be a Draymond Green kind of guy?
I think he has the athletic talent. I don't think he has a basketball IQ as of yet, but he's still young, right? So I think if he went to the right situation with the right coaching, like, he could be a monster.
But he's in this situation.
Yeah, well, for sure. But I think if, you know, Isaac and Bamba eventually develop into the players that a lot of people expect them to be, I think Gordon could be a guy that's a trade candidate 2 to 3 years down the road.
Just like Blake Griffin was.
True, but I think in terms of their offensive game, like, Blake came in and he was something else. Like, he averaged 20 points out of the gate, whereas Gordon didn't really have a lot of offense coming out of college. And he's improved over the course of the last couple of years, but I just don't think he's there yet. He doesn't really have a lot of moves that he can go to yet. I mean, his three-point shot's okay, like we discussed. His off-the-dribble game needs a lot of work, though.
He's just a slasher, right?
Like, no, I mean, he shows some flashes off the dribble. I mean, he had a couple, you know, he had some nice pull-up shots throughout the course of the year. Like, he showed a little bit of a pull-up game, but it looks a little bit disjointed. And then, like, when he gets to the basket, he just tries to jump over people still. So he still has to work on that part. But I think with him, it's just a matter of getting more talent around him. So yeah. They just have to be a primary guy. He can just be, like, a third or fourth option. Then his game, I think, would take off.
Yeah, if we could get him a real point guard, it'd be so good for his career.
Yeah, that would also help too.
Like a semi, not even like a good point guard, like a decent point guard. Like, who's an average, just like a run-of-the-mill average guy? Like,
no, I mean, going back to talking about Charlotte, I think this is one of the teams that could be going after Kemba Walker in the offseason.
Oh, that's true. Kemba would be nice on this team.
Yeah, most definitely. Definitely in a point guard, whether it's in the draft next year or getting a guy like Kemba Walker or, you know, even like trading for a guy like Lowry if they really wanted to try to win, which I don't really see why they would, but. But no. A team like Orlando hasn't won in a while. Maybe their management just says, like, all right, let's just go for the playoffs and trade for a guy like Lowry.
That would be wonderful. Let's get Lowry off the Raptors while we're at it. I like this.
I'm a Lowry guy, so I'm not a fan of that idea. But, it's, you know, the type of idea where, like, you want to trade for a guy that can just run your team and be able to hit shots in a pinch.
Yeah. Sort of like Jameer Nelson.
Yeah, the old Jameer Nelson.
Yeah, bring back Jameer. That's what they have to do in Orlando.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of their over-under, what is their number this year?
31.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go under.
Yeah. Same. I'm looking like 26, 27?
Yeah, I would say so too. I think the chances that they trade Vucevic too at the deadline is pretty high. They may not get much back for him. I think he's on an expiring contract this year. He's actually got a pretty good contract, too. I think he's on, like, 1 year, I think, $14 million or so for this year. So I can see a team that just needs a guy that can score off the bench, especially.
He's actually under 13. 12.7.
I think he's a bargain. He's a really good player, I think. And especially if he's playing, like, 20 minutes a game on a team that's, you know, aspiring to win some playoff games, like, he could add a lot to that type of team.
Shouts to a friend of the pod, Hugo.
Yeah, loves the itches.
He is a good player. He's, I think, the type of center he is. It's, I want to say not prehistoric, but you know what I mean? Like that kind of old school center. But he's developed his game a lot. Like, he's got a nice little jumper now. If he can get a little better on defense, he'd be still very relevant in the league.
Yeah, I mean, even if he can't, like, you look at a team like Boston that played Greg Monroe in different situations, just trying to add a boost to their team when they were down in games just by scoring in the post and scoring off the pick and roll. Like, Vucevic is much better at that than a guy like Monroe. So I think if he were to go to a playoff team and get, you know, 20, 25 minutes a game and just be a guy that can score 20 points in, you know, a specific playoff game, just getting hot off the bench, I think that he could help a lot of teams.
That's fair. Maybe.
And honestly, you think that Bamba's going to be starting at some point in February, March anyway, even if Vucevic is still on the team. So I think that's where Orlando, you know, even if they've won 20 games by then, they're just going to, you know, work on development instead of trying to get wins.
All right, moving on. We're going to go to Washington. Obviously, the major move of their offseason was trading for Dwight Howard for some weird reason. They traded away Marcin Gortat and got Austin Rivers back, which is an interesting play. And they signed everyone's favorite veteran, Jeff Green, to a one-year veteran minimum.
Yeah, it seems like they added all the malcontents that people have thrown around the NBA and hoping that they're going to get their careers back to what they used to be. Except for Austin Rivers. Like, he actually has improved the last couple of years.
Hold on. Jeff Green for one-year veteran minimum isn't bad.
it's not bad. It's just like, don't be counting on him to play like key minutes at the four off the bench and possibly even, you know, starts or. Yeah, I think so.
Get out of here.
He's not going to start, but I think if there's an injury, I think they would count on him to be the starter over a guy like Oubre.
He's a filler. Yeah.
That's what everyone says when Jeff Green comes on the team. Then he always ends up starting. I mean, look, he started game 7 against Boston last year for the Cavs. He always finds a way to end up. No, for sure. But I'm just saying, like, he always finds a way to end up playing like 25 to 30 minutes a game when you expect him to just be like a guy that plays 15 minutes a game.
He'll play like 20 to 25,
and that could be a problem if you're looking at, you know, a guy like Oubre who needs to, you know, get more minutes to develop his game, and he's probably a better player than Green at this point anyway. So if they end up playing Green over him, I think that's a mistake.
That would be very awful, but I don't think they will. I think Oubre will end up playing more. But I want to talk about Dwight. Obviously, the biggest trade of the offseason for them. What the hell? Is it really worth it to put it like to take a risk on this guy? When he's been chased out of every team he's played on for the past 3 years?
I think it was a combination of just trying to add more talent without thinking about fit, but more so that, I don't really think that the relationship between John Wall and Gortat was really working, just based on those guys just going at each other in the media the entire year last year.
That was pretty funny.
It was pretty awesome. Yeah. But
and it was great content. Let's be real. These guys talking shit to each other through ESPN was absolutely amazing.
Yeah, for sure. But that relationship just broke at the start of last year. And, you know, once Wall went down, when Gortat made those comments about them being a better team without John Wall, I think that was like the last straw. And one of those guys had to go. And obviously, they're not going to choose Wall as a guy that's going to be traded over Gortat. So they chose to get rid of Gortat and get a better talent in Dwight Howard, but a guy that just has not accepted his role. And with the reports that came out this offseason with him trying to become, you know, a hybrid Anthony Davis, Kevin Durant at age 31. It just goes to show you that he hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, that's pretty funny, man. To think that you can become Kevin Durant / Anthony Davis when you're past your athletic prime is hilarious. When you've never been able to shoot.
I feel sorry for Scott Brooks having to deal with all these knuckleheads on this team. Like, you have Wall and Beal who don't get along, or like they improved their relationship last year, but the year before that they were going at each other's throats. Markieff Morris has had some issues off the court with his brother beating up people at the club. And then you got Dwight Howard, who's been the biggest malcontent in the NBA the last 5 years. And Austin Rivers, who, you know, he's obviously had some issues with how good he thinks he is versus how good he is.
And playing like a lot of minutes. Fit on this team.
Yeah, I do too. But honestly, are we sure that he's better than Satoransky? I don't know.
I think they're equivalent. I think if you have them off the bench as the 1 and 2, Oubre at the 3 off the bench, that's pretty decent.
Yeah, it's not bad. I mean, this team actually has a lot of talent, but in terms of the fit, I'm not sure that this team is going to work.
Yeah, it's just chemistry at this point, right? Like, if these guys can all get along with each other, they'll be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, if the John Wall, Dwight Howard pick and roll actually works and Dwight accepts his role as the role man, like, he'll get a ton of looks. I mean, Gortat averaged, you know, 12 to 13 points per game in the last 5 years, just catching handoffs and, you know, dunking the ball or shooting a little hook shot when he's wide open. So if Dwight accepts that role, like, he could average, you know, 16, 18 points a game and be like a super efficient player. But knowing Dwight, he's going to want like a ton of post-ups like he always does. And he's going to really hurt that team's offensive efficiency if he does.
Yeah, Gortat actually stayed relevant because of John Wall's pick and rolls with him last year. Or not last year, but for the past, like, 3 years, right?
Yeah, you could tell his defense fell off the last 2 years, especially. Before that, he was actually a pretty solid defensive player, but the last 2 years especially, teams were just picking on him.
Yeah, he got really slow.
Yeah.
I like this team, on paper at least. On paper,
I like the idea
amazing.
Of this team.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you could see them, like, within the first 5 games of the year just going at each other's throats, and this just being, like, a situation where they'd blow it up and eventually fire the coach and trade a bunch of guys.
Oh, man, you're harsh. I don't think so. I think they're going to end up at, like, the 5 or 6 seed in the East.
Yeah, I expect that, too. But I think it's just more so based on talent. I don't really see them beating, like, the top 4 seeds in the East or even having a chance to, just based on how Dwight has, you know, acted the last 5 years.
Yeah. I also think you're underrating, like, Bradley Beal and Markieff Morris. Because we haven't talked about Beal at all, right? Like, he's one of the best shooters in the league. He's sort of crumbles in the clutch, which is kind of annoying, but throughout the regular season, he'll be great.
I don't know if he crumbles in the clutch. I mean,
yeah, just he had free throws down the stretch, man. He literally cannot shoot free throws. It's so weird.
At the same time, though, like, he was the best player in that Boston series 2 years ago against really tough defense, and he was averaging like 27 points a game, hitting crazy shots, especially in that game 7. So
that's true. That's true. And Markieff, I don't know why you're hating on the guy so much. He's not like that much of a malcontent, so to speak.
It seems like he beefs with every single person that he has to match up against, though.
That's okay. He's hungry. I think that's being, like, hungry or, like, a quote-unquote goon on the court is very different than being a malcontent.
I guess, but when you beat up people off the court, there's something wrong with you.
Yo, whatever, man. They all get into fights. It's only when it's, like, being published or not, or whether they get caught. But we saw, like, footage of Devin Booker getting into a fight this summer, too. You're not going to call him a malcontent.
No, but at the same time, they actually assaulted, like, him and his brother assaulted somebody, so I don't know.
They just beat up a guy at a bar. Come on.
Now, I like Markieff as a player, but, and their starting five actually did pretty well last year in terms of overall net rating. But, again, the Dwight factor, like, how is he going to fit in? Is he going to accept his role, or is he going to try to be a three-point shooting, you know, center who hasn't done that in his career yet? He can't even shoot free throws. He's trying to shoot threes now. Like, what is this?
I mean, Andre Drummond is doing the same thing, so I guess we'll see.
I don't think there's any chance in hell Dwayne Casey lets Andre Drummond shoot threes. I mean, he let JV do it because JV showed it in practice over the course of the last 2 years, but I don't know. I just don't see it happening.
Yo, Andre Drummond going to get benched so hard.
And I wouldn't be surprised if Dwight does too.
Yeah, fine. All right, Washington's over-under is 44.5. What do you got?
This one's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, based on what we've seen from these guys the last few seasons, I think you have to take the over, but with the Dwight factor, I'm going to take the slight under. I'm going to go with 42 or 43 wins. I can see them being as high as 48 or 49, to be honest.
Yeah.
Just because if he does accept his role and John Wall gets him to commit. That's the other thing we haven't talked about is fat John Wall, though. He does not look good. Like, I've seen him in those, you know, Ball is Life clips where he's playing in the offseason with a bunch of NBA players. He looks thick, man. He looks big.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't look like he's in the best shape of his career, that's for sure. But I think he can work that off.
I guess, but do you want to come into the season? That. Like, the guy who's had a bunch of knee injuries and knee surgeries coming into the season out of shape, that's probably not the greatest thing for your legs and your knees.
You're right. I don't know. I'm optimistic about this team.
This team just has so many little things and, like, that could turn into big things, obviously, and chemistry issues that it's hard to put them at, like, that number at around 50 wins, but they do have the talent to do it. It's just a matter of them committing to each other, which they haven't really shown yet anyway, so
yeah.
I'm going to take a slide under.
I'm going with the slide over. I got him at 45. I think Vegas has it, like, perfect at 44.5. But I think they get it. I don't know. I'm optimistic. The East is also hella weak. So, again, they're going to be playing...
Though?
In their division, they have Orlando...
Oh, the division, Atlanta, yeah, but I mean, like, the top of the East, like, for them to actually make it to the second round, I think that the top four teams are tough right now.
Oh, you know, I don't mean advancing in the playoffs. I just mean for their record.
Mm.
I mean, during the regular season, Orlando, Charlotte, and Miami are in their division, and that's, count those up as W's easily, right?
Yeah, that's the one advantage they have going for them is they play these teams four times instead of, you know, playing the other teams, the tougher teams in the conference three times, so.
Exactly. And because of that, I think a lot of teams in the Atlantic are going to have a much tougher time with their over-unders.
Yeah, you're the best three teams in the league, or in the conference anyway, in that division, so it's going to be tougher for them for sure.
Exactly. But yeah, I like Washington this year. I like them for 45, so I'd put my money on it.
I'm going to put my money on Dwight being a malcontent again, and just being a guy that brings his team down. So I'm going to go with the slight under for sure. Yep.
Fair enough. All right, that's all the time we have for this week. I'd like to thank you for tuning in to our homage to Manu Ginobili and our first division preview. We're going to keep this stuff going next with the Central Division. Remember, find us on iTunes, rate and subscribe. Hit us up on Instagram and Twitter. And until next time, peace.